today on the Aspire podcast, I have Sabine Ford Arthur. Sabine Ford Arthur is a student at St. Cyril's. St. Cyril's is a Coptic Orthodox theological college. She's been studying her bachelor and now doing her honours, potentially a PhD in the pipeline. And I'm super excited about this conversation. This podcast, if you're new to it, is all about encouraging people to consider paid gospel ministry. And one of the hearts that we have on the podcast is to really have a diverse collection of people, knowing that the global church is diverse and we're united in Jesus. And so my uncle is the director of teaching and learning. We might have Michael on the podcast at some point. And so I reached out to him and asked, give me a student, a bright and noble student from St. Cyril's who we can have on to share their story. So welcome, Sabine, to the Aspire podcast.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Well, to start off, how about just introduce yourself, give us, you know, a bit of a bio of who you are, where you live, who's in your family, that sort of thing?
Sure thing. So I am 23 years old. I am married and no kids, but a nice little cavoodle. We've recently moved to the Shire, and that's because our church is down here in the Shire and we wanted to be closer to that. A bit of background, I wasn't a Christian. I didn't grow up Christian. I was baptized Catholic and did my sacraments, but that was purely for the sake of me being able to go to a Catholic school. I had a little bit of an interaction with Pentecostalism when I was about 14 years old. I went to a Friday night youth group and some youth camps, but then moved away from it for a couple years before at 18 years old came back to a Pentecostal church in Sydney and dedicated my life to Christ, I guess you could say. But I wouldn't say I was 2 feet in at that point. I would say I was 1 foot in and then 1 foot out and 1 foot in and 1 foot out. It wasn't like consistent. And that was, I was at that Pentecostal church for 5 years. And then about 2 years ago, I converted to, I converted to Orthodoxy. So I'm part of a church that identifies as a multicultural Orthodox church. It's called St. Luke's Orthodox Church in Sylvania. It is part of the Coptic, which means Egyptian diocese. So if you've heard of Orthodoxy before, you might have heard of Greek Orthodoxy, you might have heard of Russian Orthodoxy. This is another branch, a geographical region of Orthodoxy. They're all pretty much the same in their faith, but just come under different jurisdictions and different leaders. And then in terms of my church, it's specifically a mission-focused church. So you'll notice if you Google St. Luke's Orthodox Church, we're not called a Coptic Orthodox Church. That doesn't mean we don't come under the Coptic leadership and that we have beautiful Coptic priests. But the idea is to move away from the cultural boundaries that Orthodoxy sometimes puts up. So our liturgies are prayed in English. Our congregation is made up of a whole different array of nationalities. Our churches are designed to move away from a specifically Egyptian feel to make it feel more comfortable for Australians. So, yeah, the Coptic Church is doing a really awesome job at opening up the beauty and richness of Orthodoxy to Australians. That's in the Shire. And in terms of just study, I'm, as Aaron said, at the end of my undergrad. So I finished that off and starting to move into some postgrad work. And apart from that, I actually work as a reformer Pilates teacher. So a little bit different. But yeah, that's a quick little blurb about me and my church.
Yeah, really cool. Thanks for sharing that. Lots of really interesting things to unpack there. Sutherland Shire. Yeah. Very cool. One thing we've kind of just dipped our toes in at the start of each episode is getting a bit of context for where someone's grown up and how that's kind of formed them. Are there any particular stories that come up from growing up in the Shire?
So I didn't actually grow up in the Shire. Okay. For me, I actually grew up thinking that Sydney ended at the airport. So I literally thought that was it. That was Sydney, and past that was not part of Sydney. Probably Wollongong. So I never went past the airport. I grew up in the north and in the east. And then my husband and I, when we got married, we lived in the eastern suburbs for a bit, and we just found the commute was too challenging with church. So I'm only a recent Shire girl, but I can say it's true that when you move to the Shire, you don't want to leave the Shire. That's a stereotype that is 100% accurate. It's like a pain when you've got to leave the Shire because you just get really lazy and you just want to stay in your little bubble and don't want to leave.
So good. Oh, that's really interesting. Oh, I relate to that. I am a manly boy through and through, but my grandparents, who I love dearly, or my grandma, I should say, lives out in Constitution Hill in Parramatta.
Right.
And Michael and so forth, they live scattered across Sydney. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, keen to hear more about how you converted to Orthodoxy, because that's really interesting. You don't hear that every day. So tell us a bit about that story. You said in a Pentecostal church and then moved over. Obviously the purpose of Aspire isn't to necessarily encourage people to change traditions, but I think it's worth exploring, absolutely, and we're not afraid of tackling tough topics on the podcast. So yeah, would you just shed a bit of light about that chapter of your life and how that kind of transpired?
Totally. And I did want to say, I think it's really beautiful the way that you're bringing unity between different traditions on this podcast by inviting me. So I think that's really, really encouraging and definitely something that I'm passionate about as well. So Pentecostalism, I loved my church. It was like filled with the most amazing people who became my family and my best friends and my whole world. And I was really formed there, like at the beginning of my journey. And so I am so grateful for my Pentecostal experience. But I'd say what happened was probably when I started to get really serious about my faith, I noticed that I was really hungering for more. And I couldn't really articulate what I wanted. I just knew that I wanted more than what I was receiving at that point, more of God. I loved the community. I loved the service. I loved the purpose that I got, but I wanted more of God, and I didn't really find that I was given a lot of direction and guidance about how to go after that, other than like pray and read your Bible. But I didn't really know how to pray, and I didn't really know how to read my Bible properly. So I decided that in order to get that guidance, I would have to go to Bible college, which I guess links into this this topic of the podcast. And so I just picked a diploma of ministry at Alpha Crucis College, and I specifically picked subjects because they have a bunch of core subjects, but I picked subjects that were like theology and Bible. Because I thought that that's what I was longing for, and I wasn't getting that as much at church. I was probably, I would say, misguided as to, and this is no one else's fault but mine, as to like the purpose of Bible college. It doesn't, especially when you're online, like my Bible college experience was all online. It was great for my head, but wasn't great for my heart. I grew in all this knowledge, but what I was really seeking was union with God. And I wasn't really getting that. I was getting a really great understanding of the context of Genesis and all those sorts of amazing things, but not the union with God that I was after. So I became a little bit disillusioned with it and thought, oh, like I don't really think I want to, keep studying this, or I don't really know if I want to keep going down this path. And so I started to explore other paths, so other traditions, and just online. It was purely online. I would read like a ridiculous amount of journal articles, which sounds crazy, but I was just like trying to understand the faith, trying to understand God, trying to understand what I was seeking after and what I was feeling like I was lacking. So I read like a whole bunch of journal articles on different traditions and YouTube videos, and this was over the course of like quite a lot number of months. I stumbled across Orthodoxy online, and what really appealed to me was the history of the Orthodox Church. I didn't really know anything about church history except for like my church, my specific church. I didn't even really know what denominations were, to be honest. So I was really attracted to the history of Orthodoxy. I didn't really know a lot about the theology. But I remember when I was watching these videos, they would mention the church fathers, who I had no idea about. And one of the church fathers is St. Athanasius, an early church father, which even like quite a lot of Protestants have heard of. He's pretty famous. He's written a book called On the Incarnation. And so I thought, well, these are the early church fathers. These are the ones who are, you know, closer in time to Christ. And there's continuity in a lot of these early church fathers where we've been able to track that, like, they were disciples of the disciples of Christ, you know. So there's that kind of generational linkage as well, passing on of knowledge. So anyway, I picked up on the Incarnation and I read it. And honestly, I felt like I was reading a different religion. Like, I just went, if that is Christianity, that's not my Christianity. And I don't know what I'm really reading. I couldn't really understand it, not from a language point of view, but genuinely from like a, what he's describing as the goal of the Christian life is not the goal of my life that I understand it to be as a Christian. So I really struggled because I was thinking, you know, am I going to say that my version is right? Like, and I did for a little bit. I kind of numbed myself to it. And I put the book away. I shut the door to Orthodoxy and I just went, you know what? I like my church. I love my family at church. I love the feeling of purpose that I have at church. I'm just going to ignore what I've read. And that kind of worked for a little bit before that gnawing feeling came back of like, I'm longing for more. And when I was reading St. Athanasius, it felt like I was kind of tapping into what I was seeking for, not really knowing what I was seeking for, but I felt like something that he's describing is what I'm after. And I mean, if I could narrow it down, and this is like very well known to the Orthodox, like if you just say this statement, they'll immediately tell you it's St. Athanasius, but it's like, it sounds very crazy to a non-Orthodox or even a Catholic person, depends who you're talking to these days. But St. Athanasius's most famous saying is God became man so that man could become God, lowercase g, not capital G, like not a part of the Trinity, but the essence is that we could share in the life of God. And like, it was like a light bulb just switched on. And I was like, that's what
theosis?
I want.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Theosis. Yeah. A technical theological word. But I just went, oh my gosh, like this is what I want. Like this is what I'm after. It was just beautiful. And the more that I researched it, the more that like, I guess this innate desire in me became like satisfied almost. Like I think every human being wants theosis. And if you don't know what that is, like feel free to look it up or I can go into it a bit more. But I think every human being wants it. And I think the Orthodox Church is conscious of that and gives people the tools to reach that. And so like when I felt this gnawing feeling come back and I went back to looking into Orthodoxy, at the same time, I was praying a lot and I realized that I'm a visual learner and I love praying with an image in front of me to keep me focused. So I used to Google a photo of Jesus and just hold it in front of me on my phone and just pray to it because it helped me concentrate. Otherwise, my mind wandered. And so I was doing this for a little bit and I found that I was getting distracted looking on my phone, like I would just click on text messages and Instagram. So I wanted like a physical image, which from my research of Orthodoxy, I knew was called an icon. In the Orthodox Church, icons are filling our church and fill the home, and there's a prayer corner in the home that has icons in it. And so I just Googled like, where can I get an icon? And there was a store about 10 minutes away from my church. And so I went off, I didn't tell anyone, and I went to this Orthodox bookstore and walked in, and I honestly felt like I was in heaven. Like, I can't describe the feeling. I was like, I feel like I'm in another world, and I wanted that world. Like, I knew when I walked in, like, this is what I want. And I walked around, and I must have looked like so out of place because I just had no idea what was going on. And I was there for about an hour. You know, I came in to get an icon, and I was just reading and looking around. And I ended up picking up a book that is called Thirsting for God in Shallow Waters. And even the title just resonated with me. And I picked up the book and looked at the blurb, and it was about the story of a Pentecostal pastor who converted to Orthodoxy. And after reading the first page of the book, like, for the first time, I felt like someone actually understood what I was going through. Like, bear in mind right now I'm describing it all, but I couldn't have described it to you like the way I am now at that point. And so I didn't even really share with my husband what I was feeling because I couldn't put my finger on it. But for the first time I felt like, oh my gosh, that's it. That's what I feel. I feel this longing for more. And so I picked up the book, I picked up the icon, and I started reading the book, and I ended up canceling work for like a whole 2 days and just read this book. And by the end of the book, like, I knew I was going to be Orthodox. The issue was I was newly married, and my husband and I were very planted in our church, and my husband was very committed to our church. And I was like, what am I going to do? I want to be Orthodox right now. So, and I hadn't even told my husband I was reading this book. So it was a little bit of a crisis early on in our marriage, tested us, that's for sure. I won't go into the details, they'll get boring. But so what we agreed on, though, was I would study an Orthodox degree at an Orthodox college, but we would stay at our Pentecostal church. And that was where we kind of came to this middle ground of like, I'll still get what I'm looking for, but we won't leave our community. And that was really what tied us to our church, was our community. And we were involved in leadership and running teams and all those sorts of things. So there was a sense of responsibility there to the people we were serving. So we thought, great, that's awesome. And that's when I found St. Cyril's, where I am now. I found it online, and I actually emailed Michael, so your uncle Aaron, and asked to set up a meeting. And we sat down, and poor Michael, like, I think he was thinking he was getting someone that was just going to ask about pathways for study. And because I was going through all of this in my marriage and like this kind of faith crisis of what do I believe and all this stuff, and he just copped it. Like, I just ended up asking him all these really deep and important questions, and I think he just was like, this is not what I expected. So he directed me to a priest who is also the dean of our theological college, and said, you know what, I think these questions are probably better suited to Father Dan. And he graciously, you know, dealt with me in my state of crisis. And he encouraged me to study, and he welcomed me, and he said, you know, you can stay at your Pentecostal church. You don't need to convert to Orthodoxy, but you are so welcome to study. And I loved that. I thought that was really beautiful and open-minded. And I did meet up with the priest, and he kind of was counseling me through this time of our lives. But what I quickly realized when I started studying is that Orthodoxy is so different to Protestant theology. What I mean by that is I really don't think you can study Orthodox theology and not be Orthodox, because the theology in Orthodoxy is very much targeted to your way of life. So in Protestantism, you'll often hear like, oh, I don't do theology, I just worship God. Or I'm not interested in all that kind of like theological stuff, I just want me and Jesus, right? You'll kind of hear this like separation between head and heart. But for the Orthodox, the theology and the spirituality are one. You can't break them apart. And your study of theology, you can't do unless you're participating in the life and the rhythms of the church and the sacraments. It does not work. So I tried it, and I was like, I thought this was going to be our solution, but it's not. And so thankfully during this time, my husband was kind of open-minded as well, and he was interested in learning about Orthodoxy, and he actually met up with Father Dan as well. And he has his own journey, which I won't go into, but he ended up deciding he wanted to convert to Orthodoxy. So we both kind of came to the table and we said, like, we're ready to leave our church. And our Pentecostal church was awesome. They were so supportive and encouraging and loving, and we still have relationships there. They were confused, I would say. They didn't really understand, but still very encouraging of us. So we ended up leaving. We moved to our current church because the dean of St. Cyril's is the priest of St. Luke's, where we go. So he just said, look, no pressure, but you guys, if you want to just come and just get a taste of Orthodoxy, feel free to come. There's absolutely no pressure to leave your church. For a little bit, he actually encouraged us not to leave because he could see that, you know, maybe there was some emotional decision-making happening, and he wanted us to make it, you know, a solid decision out of reason and time and good judgment. So he actually said, don't come, like, just wait for a bit. So yeah, like theology led me into Orthodoxy, if I can put it that way. But I know that was really long. I hope that wasn't too boring.
No, that was so interesting just to hear the different steps of your journey of getting to St. Cyril's and just hearing the longing for depth and longing for substance, and just hearing how God kind of guided you in that way. That was really fascinating. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I've definitely in recent times come to really appreciate more the church fathers as well. So recently I've been reading some John Chrysostom and,
oh, cool,
and Gregory of Nyssa.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful.
Basil the Great. So there is such a depth there, isn't there? So, yeah. And I think you're right that often we do miss out on some of the depth of the church fathers and what they have to offer in terms of our spirituality and our theology.
Totally.
I'd love to hear more about what kind of Bible college looks like for you. You kind of started to go into it a little bit, but just give people a bit of a snapshot for what your Monday to Friday looks like at St. Cyril's, some of the rhythms, some of the routines. You mentioned how theology is not just about learning information, but it's about kind of experiencing Jesus, his presence, or hinted at that. Could you kind of give us a bit more about what that looks like for you now? Yeah,
totally. I would say, like, the heart of it comes – not the heart of it. What do I want to say? The way that theology and spirituality is linked, I think, is based on the faculty that teach. So I think St. Cyril's has done a really good job at employing faculty who care first and foremost about the formation of students. So a lot of the faculty are actually priests. And so, yes, they're teaching about theology and knowledge and Bible and all those sorts of things, but everything they teach comes back to how does this transform the students. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily like they've got a million like pastoral programs. I would just say that every lecture has a really practical component to it. Even when you're doing things like history and, you know, Old Testament studies, all those sorts of things, everything comes back to like, how does this transform my life? And so I like that because we don't focus on things that I think are not as important. For example, like not going into really minute details of history that, you know, scholars argue about back and forth that don't really have any impact on our life, but focusing on the historical events that have shaped the church today. Or if you're studying theology, you're not really going into the nitty-gritty of the debates, but you're looking more at the outcome and how theology has remained consistent in the church since the time of the early church. So I would say it's the approach of the lecturers that have like that's secured that goal. But apart from that, like we've got our weekly chapel on a Tuesday morning. We've got like a chaplain who is available to contact. And I also think our events, we shape our events around what's going to benefit the community. So like, for example, coming up, we've got an event called, Creativity in Christianity. So, it'll be a panel discussion about the relationship between people who are really passionate about creative expressions and who are also really passionate about their faith and how the two go hand in hand. So kind of making people feel free and empowered to embrace their creativity as part of their faith. And other events are to do with like service in the church and educating people on how to do service better and those sorts of things. So I'd say, yeah, like the efforts of the faculty and of the staff and the resources are targeted to the pastoral needs. But in terms of like Monday to Friday, like the classes are at night times because like the college realizes that a lot of people who are studying work full-time jobs, and so they don't want people to stop their work in order to study or to feel like they can't study because they work. So most of our classes run at like 7 to 9 p.m. or 6 to 9 p.m. In-person is encouraged, but online is also available for parents and those sorts of things. And I think what the college also does really well is encourage auditors. So where you don't have to study academically, you don't have to hand in assignments, you're not studying for credit, you're just studying for interest. That's what I would say. That's how they do it.
You mentioned to me, that's great. You mentioned to me offline that it is academic, but it's mainly aimed at formation. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
To have that emphasis.
Yeah, definitely.
Particularly when you do see a lot of kind of leadership crises all across the world in the church, to say that there's a college focusing on formation, character.
Yeah.
See why that's important. So
totally.
No brainers there. What did the kind of next chapter in your story look like? So you kind of spoke to Michael, you realized you wanted to start studying, you moved church. What did kind of that next season look like? And what kind of is the future now looking like for you? What are you aspiring towards with all of this study?
So we came into the church. We were brought into the church officially through baptism and chrismation for my husband. But because I had been baptized Catholic, I was just chrismated. So there's some protocols with how people from different traditions are brought into the Orthodox Church. So after a period of time where you are in communication with your priest, and you say, look, I'm really serious about this. And they say, yeah, I think you're ready for this as well. You've thought about it well. Like, let's bring you officially into the church. And that's not saying you can never leave, but it's just a well thought out decision rather than just spontaneous and sporadic. So we were brought into the church, and then we just focused on developing relationships in our church. And that's been really important, getting involved in the service of the church. My husband serves in Sunday school. I'm working with the young adults team, focusing on the young adults ministry of our church. We've really just dived deep into getting involved. And then in terms of study, I guess what happened for me was my priest, Father Dan, who's also the dean, he said to me, I can't really remember the exact words, but he had a conversation with me and he said, you know, you could think about making this, you know, a little bit more serious and doing a PhD. And that kind of blew my mind because I had never considered doing a PhD. Like, I'd never considered, you know, even doing a bachelor, to be honest. Like, I was just doing the diploma because I was seeking after more of God and thought that would give me my answers. And then the bachelor was, you know, a way to satisfy my desire for orthodoxy when I couldn't move churches at that point. So never was I intending to go into like the world of theology. That was just not my goal. But then when Father Dan said to me, like, you could think about it, I started to look into it a little bit more. I started to talk to my husband a little bit more. And I guess I started to think, like, I love reading and I love reading the church fathers, but I think some people struggle to read the early church fathers because of contextual differences and language differences. But because they're not reading them because of those reasons, they're missing out on the jewels and the treasures of the early church. And so I started to think, like, well, I love reading them and I enjoy communicating the wisdom that I've learned from them. Why not consider maybe going into some sort of like service of the church where I can basically be a mouthpiece? I don't want to come up with my own ideas. I don't really want to write any books or anything like that. But, you know, just on a teaching capacity, just relaying what I'm learning in a way that maybe makes sense for people. That was my thoughts. And so Father Dan said, like, if you want to do some sort of teaching, it's important to have qualifications that show that you've put in the time and effort to really understand what you're going to teach, as opposed to just getting up and talking in church but not having any real backing behind me, which is what I think I had done in the Pentecostal church. Like, I'd run Bible studies and meetings and those sorts of things, and I had no real backing. I had no real understanding what I was talking about. I hadn't really had the time. I was a new Christian to learn about my faith. And I guess someone who is looking into leadership in the church, I think it's so important that you go to Bible college and you actually understand your faith before you start teaching others. I think it's vital because unknowingly you might lead people down the wrong path. So Father Dan just encouraged me looking into a PhD mm-hmm. and what that would look like. And so the pathway I've gone down in preparation for that is a year of honors. So I've finished my Bachelor of Theology, and an honors year is basically a research year. So I don't really do a lot of coursework. I'm just researching. And then if all goes well, God willing, things work out smoothly, then I would start a PhD next August. And that goes for about 3 years. And then after that, I mean, I'll just see what doors open, but I would primarily just love to serve the churches, by using my research to benefit lay people. That's my goal, I think. Yeah.
Amazing. In theological lecturing at a Bible college or theological college or in a local church setting or just whatever opens up?
I think both. I would be more passionate about the local church setting, but why I love St. Cyril's is it is a lot of lay people that just want to understand their faith more. So I would love to work in a college like that. Both.
Hmm. Yeah, amazing. You mentioned your church has kind of got this missional edge that really piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. You mentioned it just means kind of trying to be linguistically sensitive to the culture and I guess contextualize. Anything else to say about that, about how your church kind of operates and how it incorporates, I guess, the ancient liturgy, but also tries to be bring people in?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the Coptic church recognized that, like, Australians can't, I mean, there were some that were coming to Coptic churches, but Australians can't really access the depth of Orthodoxy because of the cultural boundaries. And so the Orthodox Church does an awesome job at assimilating into cultures. That's why we've got the Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, the Coptic Orthodox. They all believe very, very much the same things. Their liturgies are very, very similar. But they've done an awesome job at making the faith, the same faith, feel very similar to the people who are worshipping their day-to-day life and, like, their culture that they're in. So Orthodoxy is incredible at that, and I think that's what the apostles really wanted to do. Like, when they went and spread the gospel, they made it accessible to whoever they were speaking to, as St. Paul says, like, I became a Jew to the Jew, I became Gentiles to the Gentiles, slave to those who were slaves. Like, I think Orthodoxy does that. Unfortunately, I think just because historically immigrants have come over into Australia and being minorities, they've grouped together and kind of created these cultural ghettos as a way of feeling safe, as a way of protecting their cultural heritage, and maintaining a sense of familiarity from their homeland. So you've kind of got, like, very closed off Orthodox churches. You've got the Greek and the Russians and the Copts and Armenians and Antiochians all in Australia, but they're very closed off, not, I think, by any fault of their own, but because of a self-protective measure. And now that you've got second and third generation immigrants who don't feel the need to protect themselves in these cultural ghettos, who are more assimilated, who have been more welcomed than the first generation's immigrants, I think, were to Australia, I think the boundaries need to start coming down. And the Coptic Church has recognized, hey, like, we possess this gem. We possess, like, the faith that has remained the same since the time of the apostles. And Australians are missing out on accessing that because we're holding on to our our cultural linguistic boundaries. Let's drop those and let's present Orthodoxy to Australians in a way that feels comfortable for them. So when you walk into our church, the church actually feels Australian, like the materials, the icons, the colours, the shapes. They've done an awesome job. Our priests have done an incredible job at making it feel home, like home for Australians. The liturgy, of course, presenting in English. Most Coptic churches these days will have an English liturgy, but there still will be Arabic and Coptic in it, which immediately, if you're walking into that kind of church as an Australian, you don't feel as included. This is not intentional, but when you don't understand certain words, you don't feel like you're really at home. So our church has completely gotten rid of any Arabic and Coptic. I'd say that's the main ways that we're reaching out to the community. I think we're also doing an awesome job at providing services to the community. So our church will have like a cafe. We're opening this week, by the way, I should say. We're actually officially moving into our building that we've been working on for the past 5 years this Sunday. And there'll be a cafe that's open. Yeah, it's huge. It's really exciting. So there'll be a cafe that's open to members of the community during the week. There'll be things like Mother's Group that will be hosted there for community members, sport for kids, those sorts of programs that I think outreach is becoming more of a focus, whereas, you know, 50 years ago it was not a focus, I think, for Orthodox churches. So, yeah, I hope that explains a little bit more about our mission focus.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I've been to one or two Coptic Orthodox services for particular relatives on that side of the family of Michael, for people unfortunately passing away, and it was always super interesting. So I'm curious to see what your church would look like if I walked into it.
Yeah, you should definitely
come. As we kind of wrap up, is there any – yeah, I will. I'll come visit. Is there any kind of – anything else you want to say to people who are – thinking about going into ministry of some kind in light of your journey, your story, any piece of advice or anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I think like my advice would be there's no harm. So if you're thinking about Bible college and you don't know whether God's calling you to paid ministry, even if at the end of the degree you find that he's calling you to secular ministry, there's literally no loss, because you're going to walk into your workplace with a better understanding of, you know, the truth. So I would say, like, take the step. It's not like you're choosing, you know, do I go into this or that, and one of the options sinful. Like, Bible college is always going to be a benefit no matter what workplace you're in. And if God does open the doors to paid ministry, then you've already taken the necessary steps. And I think they are necessary steps. I think, like, it's really important to have education as a paid minister. If you don't end up going into that, like, so what? It's not a waste. Like, you've been able to learn more about the Bible and about your faith. So, yeah, go for it. That would be what I would say.
So good. Couldn't agree more. We get to study who God is, but not only that, but actually experience him, come to know him personally and grow into his likeness. So why wouldn't you want to do that? Thanks so much, Sabine, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it and giving up your time. And by the way, guys, check out St. Cyril's got a podcast that's going to come out soon, so check that out when that comes out too. But yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much.